This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things gumshoe. In this episode, the second part of a live episode we did on Twitch, we are looking at the Eternal Lies campaign for Trail of Cthulhu.
All right. So now we're going to get into the second half of this episode. And if you're a player, either go watch one of our other delightful episodes of the Iconic Podcast or the Grand Campaign or Behind the Scenes or the Torg Fet 5 game or Exploring Glorantha. We have a ton of content on the channel. Because we're going to talk about Eternal Lies. Now, I first discovered Eternal Lies, weirdly, not on the Pelgrane website. They did a trailer for this game, and Will Wheaton did the voiceover. This is a massive campaign for Trail of Cthulhu. If you are coming from Call of Cthulhu, this is on par with Horror on the Orient Express, which both Becca and I have run. The Massive Nyarlathotep, which I have run. I think those are the two big ones, right? I mean, if you're in the newest edition of Call of Cthulhu, you also have things like Children of Fear and the Two-Headed Serpent, and there's another pulp one. But this is a 400-page, same size as the Bestiary campaign. And it comes with a musical suite to play as background music while you're running this game. And Mark and Becca and I have all used the 13th Age musical suite. That is probably my go-to soundtrack when I'm running D20 gaming. So yeah, let's get into this. And again, as always, when we're reviewing an adventure, or especially a campaign of 400 pages, we're going to try and be a little evasive about what's really going on, because if you are a sneaky player and are still listening, I'm looking right at you. We're not going to give you any spoilers. So this is a globe-trotting campaign for Trail of Cthulhu. Now, I will say my one, I don't want to say complaint. Mask starts off with such a great kick in the door. Your good friend has died and you are at the funeral and you start to put things together, right? It's such a good intro that the Call of Cthulhu podcast is called The Good Friends of Jackson Elias. Jackson Elias being the guy who dies before Massive Nyarlathotep starts. But this has a really solid start as well. It's not as punchy. It's a more slow burn start. So, Mark, when you opened this book, there was something that stood out to you that you really liked. You wanna share that with us?
Oh yeah, it's you know, the Grand Campaign. If you want to learn more about Grand Campaigns, Jam does talk on it on our channel. First chapter is player oriented. And I like that they do it because it kind of focuses your group. Mm-hmm. When you get together, yeah, everybody can play what they want, but it kind of helps you kind of focus to have the kind of the right mix. They have some pre-gens that you can throw out there to help quick start it, which is nice. Not all of them have, especially maybe some smaller adventures have that usually. But when you get these big campaign books, doesn't matter what system, rarely do you get, here's some pre-gens that would fit. Which is also convenient because even if you create all your old characters, you know, insanity happens in Cthulhu. Here's your follow-up. Bam, you can go right in the middle of a session and go, okay, here, you can play the Alienist. Boom, here you go. We've got one ready to go for you. Now, I like that right at the beginning, it has some character stuff. And then it says, stop if you're a character or player. Don't read any farther. This stuff is for you. Everything else is not. And I like that right up front. To kind of help you start, it doesn't just get into the adventure. It's how to create your whole group before you get into it. And I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Part of it, it gets with the drive and repute that it talks about is when you're doing your session zero, really, and getting into, you know, like, why are you doing this? Kind of like if you're doing 13th Age, what's your outs? What are your backgrounds? Here, they're like, well, what's your drive in this? So you're getting together so you just don't have completely disparate people in a group doing different things, unless there's a reason for it, but kind of your drive and your repute. Why are you being asked to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you happen to know the mayor of Cleveland who sends you off on this? Or is it because you're the top alienist known in mm-hmm. the Northeast United States, so they've called you in on this special case for something? So you get in that drive and repute, and I like that because it gets into the kind of the hook. It's not just, you know, the person running the game throwing that hook out there. You can get the whole group in and get there. Oh, Becca's drive is this? Perfect. This is why we're getting into it. She's in for adventure and danger.
Yeah, I am. Sounds like fun.
Well, yeah, and I mean, again, we got this thing where it's like the drive is going to be, why is your character involved in this? And mm-hmm. I love that, right? One of the things we've talked about is sometimes with Call of Cthulhu, you have this, well, why would my character even be doing this? Well, here's your drive. Here's why you're going to continue to dig down. So it does have a fun hook. And if you go and watch the trailer, we'll put it in the show notes that Will Wheaton does the voiceover for. Something happened in the 1920s. Some big event happened. Investigators got called up, called in, did their thing. But they didn't so much stop it as they kicked the can down the road for the next generation, which is something we've talked a lot about. What's heroic? I mean, maybe not on the channel, but that's one of the things that's heroic for me about Call of Cthulhu. You know you can't win, but you can keep the gate sealed long enough that maybe some part of humanity escapes. And so that's sort of what happened. And again, we're gonna talk really high level. We're going to talk around some big things because this campaign does have such a big twist that we don't want spoilers to be from us. I actually think, don't they talk about, please don't spoil this, like, if you're talking about it on the forums, because it's a really great adventure and has a fun twist to it. Mm-hmm. So they do provide you with ready-made characters, which is something else I really like about it. And the investigators in 1924 managed to delay a massive ritual which would have summoned a world-ending threat entity. But now it's been almost a decade, and those people who were involved are dying off. And the people who are responsible for summoning, the stars are starting to be right again. And so your heroes sort of come in at the 11th hour to go out and try and stop this. There are some major antagonists. I love the fact that, much like we talked about in Hideous Creatures, there's a group of cults, there's a network of cults. Again, if you've played Massive Nyarlathotep, this is a very common theme in Cthulian gaming. But the cults also have variations to throw your players off from who's actually involved behind the scenes. We have this weird thing called the Nectar, which is so gross, and the Mouths. So if you are into mouth tentacle body horror, you have come to the right adventure. But let's start with Act One. It is a... every time I think about saying that, PTSD to Patrick Rothfuss books. It is a story told in three parts. And Becca, do you want to give us introduce us to Act One?
Yeah. So I don't even know where to start, man. It's throwing me. Where do you start? You start by your group of investigators somehow, for some reason, are hired to investigate a man's past. Mm-hmm. His daughter kind of asks you to come down to Savannah, Georgia, figure out what's going on. The deeper you get, again, we've got to stay high level and phrase things right. Mm-hmm. The deeper you get into the problem, the more traumatic it is. Yeah. And it leads up to just the idea of what cult activity is actually taking place, who actually is like doing anything right now, and how much do they have in connection to that previous cult, if mm-hmm. anything. And then as a result, it leads you out. You gather clues to five more locations, which right. is Act Two.
Right.
So it's a very simple, straightforward, I put that in quotes, act, because you show up, you investigate, you get the information, and then you get the clues for the next step.
Right. And you go from Savannah, you end up flying to LA to where the previous stuff was going on. And as Beck said, right, I think we mentioned in the last one, I was at Chaosium Con, I went to this panel on the mythic cults of Glorantha and like the mythic layer of all of the Chaosium games. And it got to Cthulhu and they were like, listen, Cthulhu is the anti-myth. Nobody worships Cthulhu or the outer gods because they want something from the afterlife. They worship it because they want something in this life. You worship, right, Dagon because he can bring you the riches from the sea. You worship Shub because you like orgies in the forest. So there is some weird, as a keeper, read through this book and gauge it to your table. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
But yes, as Becca said, Act 2 really opens up. Mark, what were your thoughts on Act 1 before we jump into Act 2?
I liked it. Like you said, it is pretty straightforward to kind of get you into it, hooked into it. There's good reasons to go. It's real simple. Look into someone's past and lead you on to. And then it, bang, opens up from there. So it's pretty good. I liked it.
We actually had somebody on the Iconic Discord channel, which all of our patrons get access to. So if you would like to get access to the Discord channel, jump over to patreon.com/iconicproduction and support us, and we'll send you an invite link. Escape Artists played the first part of this campaign a few years back. It was their first game on Roll20. His comment was, it felt too large for a newly formed group. And I can see that, right? This would be like your first Call of Cthulhu campaign jumping into Horror on the Orient Express or Massive Nerlethotep. He said they did really enjoy what they finished of it, which was about a quarter of the campaign. Like starting a little bit smaller, maybe doing if you're new to Trail of Cthulhu, trying out that adventure at the back of the book as your starter adventure, that's a really good place to start. But I mean, he said his group enjoyed what they finished about it. So as Becca said, all of these things lead up to Act 2, and Act 2 very much sort of blows up, and players can do them in any order. They can follow the clues in any direction they want. And there are really sort of four locations with five plots going on, if you will. Bangkok has some cult activity. Ethiopia has a new cult and then info on how to battle the creatures that are going on. Malta, which I just thought was amazing. I love Malta. There's a Templar knight on the Isle of Malta who thinks it's his God-given duty to stop what's going on there. And you start uncovering there's a drug linked to this cult. What is this mysterious nectar? It's being spread throughout the world. And eventually you head to Mexico City, where the distribution center is. And from there you end up in a temple in the Yucatan, and getting to the Yucatan is what sort of spurs the final part of the campaign, right? Once you get your information from the Yucatan, you have this idea of what's going on, where you need to go, and what you need to stop. So I realize we're being really high level here, but you guys, if you've been a fan of Iconic for six seasons, you know this is how we do high level adventure reviews. There's a lot of information in Act 2. There's a lot of fun and very wild scenes and iconic confrontations in a Trail of Cthulhu way. What were your thoughts on Act 2? Is there anything that stood out that you guys were like, ooh, this I could share without spoiling some of the rest?
Mark, do you have something you want to share?
Well, what I liked is you've got these areas, and surprise, surprise, they've all got a cult there.
What?
It should be part of the Cthulhu mythos. If you're playing it, you're going to find a cult. It's always the cult. What I like is certain areas, we won't say which ones, certain areas are required to go to find what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Some are not required, but they make it easier. They give you some clues to make it easier when you get to Act 3. And I like that. And it's open structure. It's not like, hey, we need to go here and then chase the tail there. And then here's the areas, and you get to go them in any order that they get presented, that your group decides to go after, which helps as the person running the game, that you don't have to you know, shoehorn them into, okay, we need to go to Bangkok next. Nope, they can go wherever they want. They'll find all these clues, and it'll eventually lead them onto Act 3.
Let me interrupt real quick, because Escape Artist is in the chat, and he said they really loved the investigation, had great memories from it. That's, I mean, that's an endorsement from somebody who has played through it at this point. Remember how we talked about all the different dials? If you've been following along this season, we talked about all the different dials in Trail of Cthulhu. This, by default, leans into the pulp Cthulhu. They give you ideas on how to bring it back into a purist mode, but the more you switch that dial to the purist mode in this campaign, the more you're going to go through characters. Now, that is a staple of Call of Cthulhu gaming, right? I believe Horror on the Orient Express and Mathis of Narlathotep at every location tells you who could become a new player character if you happen to need one. I like the fact that for this big campaign, though, they leaned into the pulp aspect and then allow you to dial it back. So they start it at the most survivable and then give you ideas on how to pull it back into the least survivable mode of Trail of Cthulhu, which is great.
And I would say not just with the purist and pulp. This definitely is, if at first reading, is very adult pulp. So you need to look at it and definitely scale it to your group and what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
For a lot of different things.
Yes, for a lot of different things.
Yeah. If you're going to read it, not just the horror, but some other stuff that's adult theme, which is fine. You just make sure your group is ready for it.
Yeah. I tend to have the benefit of always running for my friends. So we've played so much together. I know where people's lines are, and I know how to read a room and go, Becca's clearly uncomfortable. Let me pull this back a bit. Just... Read the room. That's all we're saying when you're running through this game.
Yeah.
Also, Escape Artist, good to have you in the chat while we're talking about this game. We were chatting on the Discord, and glad to have you here. All right, so Act 3. Man, this is the one that we definitely have to, like, walk carefully where angels fear to tread.
Let's say you go somewhere, and something happens, mm-hmm. or it doesn't.
Right.
Right.
So you do end up in Tibet, which is awesome. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes as well. One of the panels I was at in Chaosium Con was something that Sandy Peterson created an adventure with audience participation, and he too set it in Tibet. But as the group goes to what they think is the climax of the event, they discover that there is yet another layer to the onion and must then race to do something else. If you played through Children of Fear for Call of Cthulhu, it's somewhat similar in the fact that the mythos onion always has another layer to it. And the more you dive in, the more painfully it stings the nostrils and the eyes. But if you want to, you know, I'm really struggling to keep this analogy going. If you want to sever the onion in half, you have to keep digging. And so we all have comments like the finale, no comments. The final act happens. That is all we are going to say. Like, we all understand that this is a big thing that if you are playing, you need to be aware that part of the experience of this game is having the scales pulled from your eyes, the rug pulled out from under you, the Scooby mask revealing someone else. And we're not going to tell you which one of those three it is. And maybe it's none of them. But it's a very well-written finale. What were you guys' thoughts on the final chapter and why, again, without spoiling this campaign? We shall be discreet as we are advised in that sidebar on page 2.
I really appreciate in Act 3 when you're unlocking the third act and the Keeper is getting ready to set the stage. There's a moment, and there's a little bar in the book that talks about bringing it all home. Because if the players have been playing this, it might feel like it's outside of their control. It's overwhelming. Or even just that, like, we're all going to die as we head into this final phase. And this little bar just talks about, you know, making it, like, bringing it back, making it real for the characters and your players, and just reminding the investigators of their drive, their reason for doing this. their important loved ones, so that when they go into this, maybe instead of like really just going, doesn't matter what happens, we're all going to die anyway, they're like, well, maybe I can make it out and save my family. And that might make it more emotional when the final act then does happen and things happen in the final act when things happen because they happen. And I just think that's a really good point to be reminded of, because I feel like a lot of times when we get towards the end of a campaign, we all get into this, it's all or nothing moment. And so it's always nice to bring it back and make it a little bit more humane, which is kind of the counteract of the Cthulhu mythos of the world. The universe is trying to kill you, but you're a part of the universe and you can do something about it. Or you're part of the universe and that means you matter too. So I just thought it was a really nice little moment to be like, remember, your investigators have something to hold on to, and you might want to remind your players of this.
Yeah, I'm going to say, reading through this, I'm still convinced that the best addition that Trail of Cthulhu made to Cthulhu gaming is not the investigation skills. I love the investigation skills in Gumshoe. The best thing they added to Cthulhu or Lovecraftian gaming is the idea of drives. What actually causes your character to go further into the night than anyone else? And as a keeper, hammer those drives when you're running this campaign. Always keep it at the forefront of the character. When the darkness is closing in, that carrot of light, that's the drive that's going to keep the player chasing the next clue, moving to the next scene, confronting the next threat. And Eternal Lies is set up wonderfully for that. Mark, anything to add on chapter 3 before we go into our favorite parts?
Well, yeah, I just found, you know, specifically on page 376, there's this entry. I won't go there.
Mark.
No, they've said it. Yeah, just it's you'll appreciate it if you get to the end of this campaign. You will appreciate your reward.
Yeah, I would really like to run this campaign at some point. All right, let's talk into things that we really liked about this. So for me, one of the two things I really liked about it is I think they do a great job of making this a horrific campaign. The nectar, the drug that the cult of the Liar from Beyond is spreading around the world, is truly vile. It is truly vile. It is horrific. And even if it wasn't connected to the mythos, most of my players would go on this adventure just to put an end to something like this. Sandy Peterson in Peterson's Modern Scenarios, I forget the name of the book for Call of Cthulhu 7th, has something like this where a company is using the milk of the dark young of Shub as a revitalization elixir for people, and they're pumping it out, and it's sort of, it makes you look younger right up until you explode with pupae, or however that adventure goes. This is on par with that. And then also, like we said, hey, there's a soundtrack that you can get. And I think, so I have the soundtrack. It's very good. And what they do is they dedicate the last, before the index, maybe the last 5 or 6 pages on, hey, here's how to use every track of the score, when to use it, how to tie, which tracks to tie to which NPCs, which tracks to use for danger, to frenzy, to terror. It adds a lot, and there's a ton of handouts as well. Like, I love handouts. Becca ran Horror on the Orient Express and used my handout collection. It is amazing. I want to run Massive Nerlethotep because I bought the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society box of props for masks, and this has just a ton of great handouts. So, Becca and Mark, what were your favorite parts of this campaign?
My favorite parts, not only do we get little sidebars to help us explain or lead players or bring players back to the moment, but while this campaign is filled with a grim horror, there is a humor within these pages. There's even the suggestion being made that investigators are allowed to faint in order to avoid massive sanity loss. Thinking about my players and which ones would want to, like, use that. Like, it's a great tool because, all right, you avoided sanity loss. You're unconscious on the ground. Cool. Allow the cultists to drag away your body. It's fine. But there's this humor to how this adventure is written, this campaign is written, that I think helps both highlight the horror of the story and also lessen it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Cthulhu is such a knee slapper.
Oh, yeah, he's hilarious.
Well, but I mean, right. Like, I mean, Mark, we talked about this with the Battle Zan series, right? There are moments of, like, just brutal cruelty and horror, and the soldiers are cracking jokes because it is a natural response. We try to make light of the things we are scared of in order to make them smaller and more manageable.
Oh, yeah, dark humor is quite the thing in the military.
Yeah, gallows humor. Yeah, exactly.
It is a coping mechanism for
sure. Yeah, it really is. Mark, what about you? What did you like about this?
You mentioned some of it, you know, the player intro chapter, the sample characters are great. I also like it, and they mentioned at the beginning, they repeat information for the keeper, so you don't have to flip back to page 10. They don't have all the information, but stuff that you'll need for this scene is repeated for you, so you don't have to go, wait, I remember that's on page, and you have to go and tab it and find where it's at. It's there again for you.
Yeah.
Which makes it so much easier to run. It's great. I also like, because we said this is a globe-trotting thing set in the early 30s, there's a call out on every section for style. What do the people in Bangkok wear in 1932 compared to LA? Mm-hmm. What's hip? What's not? What's accepted? It just helps in the immersion instead of just saying, yeah, you show up there, you know, in your brown suit from Ohio, you know, because that's what you wore in Cleveland, Ohio, and you're in Bangkok. Is that accepted? Not accepted? Are you into modern, you know, European styles? I thought that was a great kind of a fluff thing that's not needed, but there's a nice large call out at each section for that, of what to kind of get you into, because we're not from the 30s. You know, I mean, I remember watching a lot of the movies for that. A lot of the younger generations don't watch the old black and whites. And what did gangsters wear in the 30s? That's kind of helpful. I thought that was really, really neat. Really neato.
Here at the end, again, it's the same price as Hideous Creatures. You get $50, 400 pages, $25 for the PDF. The musical suite, I believe you would have to purchase separately. This is, I think we're all in agreement, this is a great campaign and a great way to, if you want to play that really long-term Trail of Cthulhu game, this is the place to, maybe not to start. I would agree with Escape Artist. You really would probably want to start with one of the, with the thing at the back, the adventure at the back of the core book, or one of the other Trail of Cthulhu adventures, because this, I mean, you're committing to a 400 page adventure. For everyone trying to learn the system and then jump into this at the same time, you may want to sort of ease into this. Bookhounds of London is great. Dreamhounds of Paris. I think Fearful Symmetries is coming out here soon. So there's a lot of support for the game. Again, the reason we're starting with this game is Trail of Cthulhu has the most support of their games. I think like 13th Age, and Becca and Mark, correct me or Anon if you think I'm either right or wrong here. 13th Age specifically says it's for more experienced GMs because you have to navigate backgrounds and icons in a way that is not as well defined as in other systems. Putting together the clues for Trail of Cthulhu does require a little bit more forethought and prep on the part of the keeper. But like all of the, like, we've reviewed several of the big campaigns that Pelgrane has done, Eyes of the Stone Thief, this one, we're going to review the Dracula dossier. They're very well playtested. They are very well put together. And I think that starting with a new group, start off with something a little bit smaller, tighter focused for your players, get it under your belt, and then jump into Eternalize.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, if you really, I think chapter act one starts slow enough that you could take, you just have to get the group to understand it's going to be a long campaign. This isn't like, hey, let's do this adventure. We'll have it done in 6 weeks if you play weekly.
Yeah.
Unless you play marathon sessions, ain't going to happen.
Right.
But act one kind of starts slow enough. I think you could get new players into it. I haven't run it for new players, so I don't know, but it kind of starts out slow enough. Maybe come up with some other, you say, side quests or different things that happen before they go off into act two. Might help with that too, just to get some more of the rules in on stuff.
Yeah. We'll be back next month on the third Sunday of the month to enjoy more. Well, actually, no. We'll be back on the third Sunday of next month with an actual play of Trail of Cthulhu Run by our very own Becca. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, stay gaming. Thank you to Becca and Mark, as always, for being wonderful co-hosts.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
You've been listening to the Iconic Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and more information about the show. Thanks for listening.